Anybody else got goosebumps? Thank you, gentlemen, both of you. I think that's a fabulous way to trigger a morning of looking at how does God build people of faith anyway? That's two different ways. With Jacob, it was another way entirely. Should we look at that too? Good morning. Oh, Venus went too. Come on in, little one. There you go. When we stopped last week, Jacob had just survived. I'll use air quotes with that. His encounter with his father-in-law and a whole bunch of people with possibly hostile intent. God intervened. That's a faith builder right there. God prevented Laban from doing what he really wanted to Jacob. We pick back up as Jacob comes away from that, and as he departed from where Laban and he had made their agreement to stay away from each other, he recognizes, he acknowledges in 32, the 9th to 12th verse, he acknowledges, God, I'm not worthy of everything you have just done for me. Over these last 20 years and over these last, so to speak, 20 minutes, I crossed north with a stick. I have a staff with me. That was it. I'm crossing now with two camps because it's split into two just in case if Esau gets one, well, the other might escape. Remember that? So he had named the place Mahanaim. He had two camps, two settles. Because he had had the angels come back to him on his re-entry into what would become the eastern portion of the promised land. And yet he still, please deliver me from my brother's hand. I don't know what's coming. I know we just survived Laban. That's awesome. That's great. Thank you so much. But I fear Esau. Laban was just perturbed, maybe angry. Esau? Yeah, he's my twin, but he's my weaselly little brother twin. So, but you. You can almost see Jacob taking a deep breath here. You are the God who promised me health, wealth, and numerous descendants. It's almost like he's reminding God, if you want that to happen, you got to take steps here. Now, we never bargain with God and win, right? But Jacob's a bargainer. He didn't quite come out and say it, but the implication is there. If you don't
take steps,
Tom had trouble doing it, obviously. I don't like your attitude.
Jeff, did you enjoy your trip?
Yes, even though it's late spring, it was a nice trip this fall.
Yeah.
Sorry, periodically I season my stock myself with stuff like that. You're the God who promised me all this. So if you don't protect me from Esau, I don't know how it's going to work. My now 6-year-old granddaughter, when she was 4, I spent some time with them, and she had a way of doing that. She would present you with a situation, like she crawled up into my lap one morning. I'm still reading my Bible and drinking my coffee, both of which are necessary if I'm going to be a functional human being during that day. And she crawls up in there, and she's sucking her thumb. She lays her head on me, and then after about 15 minutes of that, that was enough. And she told me, Grandpa, I'm really bored. Okay. Okay, Penelope. But if I had somebody to play a game with me, I wouldn't be bored. Yes. God, I'm freaking out. But if you fix it, I'll stop freaking out. So he remains in place after this prayer. They're just a little north of the Jabbok River. They're just a little east of the Jordan River. And if in your mind's eye you have even a small hint of what the promised land looks like, that means he's not entirely back to where he had the vision of the step of the stairs of the angels ascending and descending. And he's not fully back where God had said, not only am I going to protect you and do all this for you, but I'm going to bring you back here, and all of these numerous descendants that I promised you are going to live in the land where your head rests, and by extension, the whole place. And he builds, he carefully constructs this present for Esau. And the term used for the present, for the gifts, it is the term used by those describing the tribute that a lesser gives to a superior. If we were talking about feudal England, the serfs would prepare tribute to the laird of the castle, so to speak, every year, in order that they may be given the privilege of continuing to be in abject servitude to the laird. Essentially, we have no rights. We know we have no rights. We'll keep giving you gifts so we get to live. Jacob does this. He prepares this kind of a tribute, the lesser to the greater, because he's setting up the whole negotiation that he's going to take with Esau, his brother, later. He puts together five separate groups. And if you read through this as the scriptural record accounts, 550 animals. And this represents a tiny portion of what he left the north with. Good grief. It is a staggering amount of tribute in an agricultural society. 550 animals. And then he staggers the departures. Each like kind with a cadre of servants and tenders and herders sends them south. Some interval later, we're not told exactly how he sends the next group. Common sense says we can't see their dust anymore, which means we don't have to eat it, therefore send the next group. That's just common sense. Saturday afternoon, I worked a double header in a group in an area that is completely under construction. It's one of the new massive subdivisions going in northern Vancouver across the river. Every stitch of the parking around this multi-field complex was loose gravel and gravel dust. Yeah, my van is silver, but it's gray now. It was so bad, before I actually drove away, I had to take a dry towel and whip at it to get my windows clear enough to see to drive home. Because I knew if I used the windshield washer fluid, I'd have mud running down the hill. But he staggers the departures, he prepares all this, he starts sending them south. He says, all right, you guys, this is the plan. I'm hoping to overcome my brother's hostility with this successive flow of gift after gift after gift after gift. You know, there's proverbs about that, about gifts allaying hostility. And the message he sends with each group is identical. All this is for you, my lord. And your servant, Jacob, is behind. It's clear, these are appeasement gifts. I know you're angry. I'm also aware that you have cause. And I even know the cause. Didn't mean to. Well, yeah, you did. But, you know. This is to atone for all the prior grievances that may have built up between brothers. This is 20 years and change since their last interaction, which had Esau swearing that as soon as dad's gone, you're toast. Yeah, you're mine. Jacob remains just north of the Jabbok River. It's still away a little bit. But then once darkness falls, he sent all this crew south. Once darkness falls, he aren't a complete idiot. He moved slightly. I mean, the diplomacy and the gifts, they're all well and good. However, prudence is better. Esau knows exactly where he is. He's got people up there. They could just be disguised as common sheep herders. You know, the U.S. service people who come back from particularly Afghanistan said there were never any secrets of location in Afghanistan. Every single herder of animals reported to somebody where the U.S. forces were. Next to impossible to keep a secret in that environment. Same thing here. Esau's got people up there in the north. He's watching. He's known Jacob had been coming for a long time. Send his family across the river. Just go across. Okay, cool. Good. You're there. I'm going to hang out here. Wonder why? Well, we don't know if we're told one of the angels told him, oh, by the way, hang out overnight, or if he had a sense, or if he was just using a moment of silence and peace to gather his thoughts, knowing that tomorrow he'll be in front of his brother. I'm going to get a good night's sleep after thinking on this, and I'll be fresh when I face him in the morning. Oops. The story is reasonably familiar, isn't it? A man comes and wrestles. What, somebody walks up and says, we have to wrestle? They do? Apparently. Until now, Jacob has survived on his strength. He was physically strong. I mean, you handle sheep, you handle livestock, you move things around, you fight off predators that are threatening the herds. You develop a certain modicum of strength. Also, he was a shrewd operator. The strength of his wits. I could outmaneuver just about anybody. Of course, I had a little help with Laban. Yeah, God said, Laban, that's a little help, don't you think? But all night long, he and this guy are unable to prevail. They are so evenly matched, the wrestling match goes on all night. I'm guessing there was not a referee with a red wristband and a green wristband holding up 2 points for a takedown, 1 point for a reversal, 3 points for a complete fall and near pin. No, there's not a guy, somebody doing that. But they neither can prevail. Now let's take a look at this. Dead Sea, Jordan River. He's come from, oh, go to the outlet and hang a right to about here. He's come from up there. He gets all the way down into this area before Laban catches up with him. They wrangle, they tussle verbally. They come away with an agreement at Mizpah. All right, we'll stay away from each other. Neither one of us will pass the monument. Remember all the stones? Yeah, Jacob and his rocks, you know. It's like he slept near a rock, he used a rock pile and put oil on it and said, this is the house of God. Now, you know, okay, we're going to come to agreement, Laban and me, grab a rock. Well, that's up here. Now he and his crew have come down to about here. This is the Jabbok River. It kind of goes up into here, it branches about six times and then just dies away to nothing because this is arid desert. Modern Jordan is still that way. This is the Arnon River. In scripture, these two get really significant because they are borders of things that are extremely significant later. Esau came up from this area. It became known as Edom, this area kind of southeast of Moab. And this was the kingdom of Ammon. Remember where they came from?
Yes.
These are the two sons of Lot's daughters. And that was lots of problems right there. Sir, did I think that on off? I'm sorry. My bad. But Edom, Red, remember the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark? The final, or the third one, I guess they put another one after. The third one where they go into that stylized building and into the cave where they're seeking the Holy Grail. That external edifice was the library at the city of Petra in Jordan. What color was all the sandstone out of which that was carved? Red. Huh. Oddly enough, that Esau, all red and hairy when he was born, lent his later name of Edom to this entire area. A all that snow was red. What a coincidence, huh? No, God kind of knows what he's doing. I won't stand too close in case I get hit with lightning for that thing. Anyway, this all happens around here. He's wrestling. He's been tussling with this man all night. But he knows before too much longer that this is not a man. Lynn.
Just a thought. I don't know if this is...
Oh, this one's going to hurt, isn't it?
Well, the word wrestle, I know we think of it physical.
Gravel.
Right. But what if all night it was an argument between him and that man? Him telling him, do this, no, I can't. In other words, wrestle until finally the man says, that's it, and hits him on the hip.
And you're not the first one to suggest that that was what was going on. The word itself opens to us the possibility that not only were there physical elements, but there were psycho-emotional elements too. Either way, this was a dispute until a certain point of evenly matched opponents. Now, whether this was the Stanford debate team against the Dartmouth debate team, or whether this was, you know, Hulk Hogan against somebody else, you know, they wrestled, they strove against each other. As dawn breaks, the man breaks, Jacob. He reaches down and he, take your pick, strikes, hits, touches, immobilizes the hip. Dislocates Jacob's hip. When you are wrestling, you need the area from here to here as a fulcrum to grapple with an opponent. Without that, you can't do it anymore. That single touch that dislocates Jacob's hip gave him a lesson. Son, your strength is pretty good. Guess what? My strength is infinite. Well, you can see his abs that will go from, you know, like his knees up to the top of his head. Maybe I'm in over my head. In this light, as dawn is breaking, you're pretty insignificant against me, Jacob. Is this a reminder of just what Jacob has been trying to wrestle with his whole life? Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. But Jacob is Jacob. Grabs a hold. One more blessing. Really? You can barely stand up. And you're hanging on to me for one more blessing? Really? Pastor, you mentioned common sense in your sermon this morning. It ain't always so common. But here we come to what Leonard was touching. This is an interesting parallel about struggling in persistent prayer. Jacob kept struggling, striving with this man to overcome. We're not exactly told what he wanted to overcome. Was this an argument about where he was in his life? Was he just trying for the dominance? You know, two roosters in one hen house. Two men get together and start. In sport, particularly in football, I see this all the time. Two guys get up and they start chesting up on each other. We immediately get close enough that they can hear our voice. You don't want to go there, guys. Because they realize they throw a punch, they're ejected. And then the state of Oregon will suspend them for the next game. That usually prevails, but I'm not saying it always does. Jacob struggled all night. This is a physical form of prayer. Once he realized, I'm struggling with the God of the universe. And you know he knew it. He especially knew it when down in, blink, holds hip disjoint, dislocates. Yeah.
And the fact that God descended and allowed the wrestling match to even occur and to go all night, really?
Yeah. I mean, you are but a gnat on the toenail of the heavenly dog. But he respected Jacob enough to make this point physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I will wrestle not only will it be a standstill, I'm going to make sure you will never prevail. Even though in another breath, he tells him, you have wrestled with man and God and prevailed. But even under defeat, Jacob holds out for one more blessing. But he finally understands. I just wrestled with the source of all that is. What was I smoking? You know, there's this dawning, it's early morning, awareness of, oh my God and my Lord. Then God asks Jacob for his name. Didn't he already know?
Of course.
I mean, he just said, don't come across some random guy, so wrestling him.
It's a reminder.
It's a reminder. Of course he knew. But he's making a point. Jacob, pay attention. What's your name? Grasper? Deceiver? There's a few more, not quite as complimentary. Yeah. No longer. You are now Israel. Literal rendering, Prince of God. That's quite a promotion. That is quite a promotion. Joe Blow, herder, negotiator, schemer, manipulator in the extreme, really knows his way around, and yet you have striven with God and prevailed. Not in the sense of overcome. But you have overcome what I have prepared you to endure to get here. You ever have one of those things? Every one of us in here, even if you don't have gray hair yet, you can look back and you can say, I now realize this and this led me to this. And this is where God needed me to be. We all have at least one story like that. Jacob's got a huge one right here. Prince is not the king, but the prince is the son of the king. Does that have any messianic implications? Jesus told his followers, as a matter of fact, I just finished the book of John this morning, you belong to the Father as sons because you belong to me. And as such, you are sons and daughters of the ever-living God. Guess what, Jacob? You are a son of the King. And your name is going to reflect this for the rest of eternity. Now, that's a pretty heavy title. He's a strong guy. I think he'd wear it. I would have just collapsed and fallen into the dust. But God played,
I'm sorry that Galen just left, but in one of his classes, we were talking about naming things.
Oh, yeah.
And the only person that has the right to name something is the owner. And
correct.
So here we have this person renaming Israel.
Yeah.
Renaming Jacob Israel.
And I really like that because it exactly points to this very thing. Who has the authority to bestow a name? The owner. I named the cats. Not that they come. Cats are cats. They don't come to their names. The only thing that brings them is food or catnip. But God himself, you're correct. Not only renamed, but re-identitied.
Sure.
Is that a word?
It is now.
I just made it work. But he gave him a new identity, but also in his identity became his new role. Jacob became the patriarch of what would become the 12 tribes of Israel. You can't throw a rock into a puddle of scripture and not trip over one of the tribes. At least one, if not all 12. So Jacob flips it over. Okay, pal, how about your name? What's your name?
You really don't want to know.
Yeah. You know, there's a certain ancient rabbinic school that believes if you actually heard the true name of God, your brain would be fried. You would die. You would collapse on the spot. That's why they always represent it. After Moses was told, when he asked, "What God shall I say sent me?" Tell him I am sent you. That violates grammatical rules in all known languages of earth. What do you mean I am sent you? Well, that's why they always represented it with the YHWH. It was believed it could not be properly pronounced, and to do so would be blasphemy. Jacob says, "What is your name?" It's culturally significant to him. It is historically significant to him. To hold the name, and we're coming back to where Dayton addressed, was to hold power. If you knew the true name of something, you held power over it, whether it was power of ownership or power of control. Very common belief in the surrounding area. In current cultures globally, use of the true name, particularly of a deity, equals the power of that deity must be exercised to fulfill your request. If you don't know the true name and you can't address him properly, well then that deity can choose to or not to grant your request. But if you know the true name and use it properly, then you compel the deity to fulfill your request. This is why, particularly in the Greek world, there were very specific formulas to be used when addressing their pantheon. Because if you make a mistake, you leave a loophole. And the Greeks, who loved the debate, and their deities, their pantheon, represented their love of the debate, lived for loopholes. Think of the story of Achilles. Mom asks for invincibility. Okay, go bathe him in the pool. But she's afraid to let go of him, so she hangs on to a piece of pity, backside of his foot, dips him, and that heel becomes, my goodness, the Achilles heel. Imagine that. This was the belief that was extant even in the time of Jacob. If you can use the true name of a deity, you can compel that deity to do your will. Still around. Debbie?
Is there a reason that God is in lowercase right there? Because I'm used to seeing it in...
And if we ever talk... Thank you. Don't rent your tongue. Don't rent your tongue. They're not worth the money you pay. It's not worth it. Yes. When we are speaking of the God of the universe, it will always have a capital. In my classes, it will always have a capital. When we are speaking of the lesser gods, the idols,
like
the
things, idols and things.
Yeah, the idol and things. Gotcha. I will always use a small g.
Okay.
And most of the time in literature about Bible stuff, when you see the baby g, it means these are baby non-gods.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. They're carved images. They're chunks of molten steel that's been cast. They're clay that's been molded. They're whatever. They're not the one you got. Yeah. So when you see that up here, that's your cue. I'm not talking about God. I'm just talking about whomever. Yeah, that Joe Blow got from down the block. You know, he lives on the wrong side of the street.
Yeah. Now I get it.
Yeah. So culturally and religiously, this still happens. This is still there. Think of the New Testament. How many times do we have Jesus demand the name of the spirit he is about to cast out? Why? To own the name creates the authority. Part of that authority to command, once he addressed the spirit by name, or knew, had the name, then he exercised the authority to exorcise. That emphasis is troubling, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's almost like the emphasis is on the wrong syllable. This one is not just exercising, like running around a track or pushing weights, but he can exercise his ability to exorcise the demon. Right?
Yeah.
I have spoken around language. Like I said, product of a misspent youth. I not only learned how to read, but my grandmother was a high school English teacher for 23 years. What are you going to do? But then God asked Jacob, what would you know? Why would you know this? What makes you think you are going to get my name? Knowing that if Jacob was having any of these things about command, control, authority, ownership, in the back of his head, God's going to say, no, we're going to shut that down right now. I'm God. Nobody owns me, nobody controls me, nobody compels me. Did you have something or?
No.
No. Yes. I saw something run through it. I just didn't know if you wanted to let it out. But even so, he still blessed him. And Jacob comes away with having this experience of, whoa. He renames a place Peniel. Remember the El suffix? That's God. Some places you will see it spelled Peniel. But both have the rendering of face of God. I just survived a face-to-face with God himself. Interestingly enough, this face-to-face, and I just love the way God does this, comes on the heels of the face-to-face with Laban. And he survived. And on the morrow, it's bringing a face-to-face with Esau. How'd that work? When God writes the music, you end up with an incomparable symphony, right? I've been face to face with God, yet delivered. Now he's going to cross the river in the morning. Well, it's already morning, isn't it? Yeah. Dawn rises as Jacob crosses the river. He rejoins the small encampment of the women and children. In a modern logistics theme, he rejoins the soft targets, the canvas-sided trucks, the tents, the things that don't wear armor. Dawn breaks as he crosses. It's literal. It's getting light. A new day is beginning. But it's spiritual. Israel, new name, but he has a new place. He has a new place. A modern equivalent I can think, Friday evening, you go in and you have a meeting with your supervisor or your boss. We're going to promote you. You're going to be whatever the title is confirmed. You come in Monday morning, there's a new sign outside your door, a new title, a new role, a new something. His name was not only a title, it was a role. It was what his place was now to be. Then we get this single verse. Trust the scripture writers to throw these things in just so we know what's going on later. There's a dietary change that came out of this. It didn't come up for a long time, but it came up. This is the only place you will ever find this particular dietary change mentioned in scripture. Exodus, Leviticus contain lists of stuff you may and may not eat, and the rationale therefore. This, they won't eat the sciatic tendon, part of the hip attachment system that makes everything flex and flow. Why? Because that was the muscle that got touched that dislocated Jacob's hip. So it made it sacred. But all the other explanations of this come from rabbinic literature from nearly 800 years beyond the fact. But it is scriptural. I never ask what kind of tendon is in the meat I'm eating. I'm sorry. I'm not a good follower here. And besides, if it's McDonald's, you don't want to know. Sorry. We get to chapter 3 and we get the grand reunion. That is not a hotel on Miami Beach. The sun rises on this portentous meeting. Jacob looks up and he sees. What does he see? There's not a thousand angels coming after me. This is 401 dudes. Esau plus 400. redeploy. Hold it, fellas. Got some shifting to do here. This newly changed relationship with God, he still reflects a certain uncertainty that it extends to the relationship with his brother. You have brought me through a lot. I have trusted you through everything. You have delivered on every promise. I still fear Esau. I just wrestled with you all night. You reassured me. You renamed me. But oh, man, that is 400 guys. I'm surrounded by a few critters and my family and personal retainers. He's still Jacob for a bit longer. Splits the family, and this just kills me. By preference. Yeah, the maids, your kids, whoop, out front.
Really?
Yeah, out front. The concubines and their children. Then Leah. She's not primary. He didn't love her. He tolerated it. Maybe. Leah and her kids. Next. Finally. Rachel. The one he loved. Oh, and Joseph. The best son. Yeah. But then he does something that does show his new status and understanding. He organizes them, walks around in the front, and goes alone toward Esau. Ooh. Did some of this change his understanding? Yes. If Esau intends harm, let him strike me in the hopes that will remove the debt. Oh, how saviorism. One in front of the others to potentially bear the penalty of the crown. Huh. Sounds like a very specific crucifixion, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. One in front of all humanity to bear the penalty for all the crimes. Jacob figured out maybe if he kills me, that will assuage his anger. Everybody else will survive. Sounds like he's willing to die for other people. Ooh. Nothing New Testament about that at all, is there? Then we get this funny little description of all these things that happen. Jacob approaches. We are told from other sources that after a prescribed number of steps toward the other, he would bow face to the ground. Then he would stand up and he'd move forward again. Now, the extra biblical sources tell us the reasoning behind it, but the Bible is mirroring a very common, I'm nobody, I'm approaching the great Lord. I will bow 7 times. Every X step, I will bow. 7 times, he bows. He is following the protocol when approaching the Lord. Now, that is not God. That's the Lord of the household, the Lord of the holdings, the Lord of the estate, the Lord of a city-state. You're way more important than I am. I'm going to dirty up my forehead 7 times by bouncing it off the ground on my way forward to you.
Should we even call him Lord?
Well, in the small letter, yes. Okay. That would be okay. You know, like you see these period pieces on television or something, and it's, you know, the butler always says, yes, my lord.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah, that's the idea here.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm the loved one, the servant, and you are the boss man. In England, it became, yes, my lord. You know, here it's a very similar way, but the term is just a little bit different, but it renders into English as Lord. So, he's not giving him God status, he's just giving him elevated status. You're better than me. Esau doesn't play along. He could have stood back and, excuse the term, lorded it over his brother, right? He runs forward and embraces him. Jacob's like, hold it, this isn't the plan. That's not the program I had laid out. Knock it off. But he falls on his neck, embraces him, weeping and kissing. And before we get weirded out by that, that's normal for the day. That's normal. That's how we do it. Then the women and children show up. Who's all this? Again, see, this is the formal suzerain, vassal, king, two subordinate roles displayed. The bowing. Esau says, oh, what's all this about? Yeah, like you're the uninjured party. This is all part of the dance. This is all part of the dance. Very, very formal. Very, very prescribed. You followed these steps when you were in a negotiation of a small to a great, and you were trying to restore something. So what's all this? What's with all the creditors, all the servants? I mean, they'd be coming to me for hours. It took us forever to get here. We had to kick them off the road so we could get through. You know, they must have been driving poorly. Jacob's answer, though, is extremely revealing, not only about what's going on, but who he now understands himself to be. These are all to find favor with you, my Lord. Terminology. The practice of meeting a sovereign. This is what he's doing. This is what Jacob has done. He identifies to Esau, your servant, my Lord, with an abundance of gifts or tribute. This is all part of a formal negotiation of reconciliation. And it parallels beautifully some of the accounts that we get from other writings of a similar era in the similar area. This was a dance. Each party moved according to their steps. Treaty negotiations now, same thing. Diplomatic niceties will be observed. Nothing of substance will ever get done on the first day. Just a fact, Seven vows, terms of submission, servant, lord, all these gifts. The sequence of the introductions. First the petitioner, then all the subordinates, then the women and children. Jacob remains throughout the humble supplicant. He no longer is placing himself or maneuvering himself above his brother. That's what all this is intended to convey.
I don't know what the word supplicant means.
I am begging you for something.
Oh.
I am coming
okay. As
a nothing to beg you to grant me.
Okay.
A smile.
Supplicant.
Yeah, supplicant. Okay. Yeah.
Basically, it's strategy, begging for mercy.
Yes, that's a good way to look at it. And in this case, in Jacob's case, it's truly mercy because there's a price on his head with this brother of his. Last he knew, he wanted him dead. They haven't seen each other in 20-some years. Esau took the next step in the dance. No. Please, keep your things. I have plenty. It's a bit like saying, oh no, please don't. But this is how the game got played. Jacob plays his part. Of course not. No, I wouldn't dream of it. Please take it. It's yours. You going to say yes or no? This, my blessing to you, out of the blessing God has given me. Now that's a different spin for Jacob. Esau relents.
Okay.
Ow, that's high enough. I'll take it. Are we good now?
They have observed
all the formalities. What?
That one reminds me of the saying we use in English. Give the credit to who have the deserve the credit. Like, for example, you have something really good, we humbly thank God for what he has given us, not what I have.
That's like grace before a meal. Mm-hmm. For what we are about to consume,
we
give you thanks. I cleaned up the King James, it's how I learned it.
It reminds me of the two Disney characters, Chip and Dale.
Chip and Dale.
Who can be more competitive at being polite? It's almost nauseating.
Of giving way. Oh, yeah. I mean, if anybody there was watching, they're going, in the corner.
I insist you go first. No, you get to go first.
Yeah, no. No, after you. Shut the door and get on with it, guys. Yeah, I agree. And this went through my mind a lot. Side note, it has nothing to do with anything at all. The first time my son saw, can't remember if it's Chip or Dale, he burst into tears, ran behind his mother, and wouldn't come out for 10 minutes. Just say it. All formalities have been properly handled. This is all formal now. This is real. It's done. Jacob correctly submitted to his brother. The gift replaced the stolen birthright. See, he did this sequentially. There was an outline. We're not told how he planned it, but this is how it worked. He restored the honors of the firstborn by rendering specific titles. Your servant bowing, he granted Esau the lordship title he was denied when he forswore his birthright. Oh, you're back on top now, Esau. All the wealth of the animals replaced the blessing that he had deceived out of his father, Isaac. He was blessed with all the fatness of the land and all the wealth of the agrarian society. He has now returned that to Esau. By accepting, Esau has accepted the terms and granted the pardon that Jacob was seeking. The relationship is restored. However, nuts. Two slides. Esau suggests proceeding together. Shall we go on? This contains a very strong hint of you will now be my vassal. You will be my underling. Not merely de jure, but de facto. And before we all get sick and, you know, the Latin being thrown into an Aramaic culture, de jure of the law. Under the laws of the land, the reconciliation is complete. But de facto, Jacob has no intention of being his vassal, of living under him. He replies carefully, but notice it's unequivocal. And he couches it carefully. He's like, that's not going to happen. However, he's smart enough not to say that. I have women and children. I have animals that are nursing. The pace you guys, 400 unencumbered, can keep, it would kill us. Wisdom would dictate that we remain apart. See, the great diplomacy there salvaged the agreement. We are reconciled, but we're not stupid. Should I leave you some help? Hint, hint. Still wants his foot in the door, doesn't he? Thanks, we're all good. You're busy, you got stuff to do. You got people to rampage, you got flocks to take care of, you got a desert to water, whatever it is. So Esau heads home to Seir, east of the Jordan, southeast of the Dead Sea. Jacob returns north of Jabbok, takes a rest. He stays temporarily on the wrong side of the Jordan. He builds a house and multiple animal shelters. This gave rise to the name Sukkah, all the booze. It was shelter for Jacob. He has just had two incredibly intense physical human encounters and one beyond intense divine encounter. You think maybe he needs to take a breath? Yeah. But that named that area. After they catch their breath, the animals are all healthy, things are moving. He crosses the Jordan, he's back on the proper side, he settles in the area near Shechem. Re-entering the promised land, pitches his tent, I love this sequence, buys some of the land, legally owns it, in addition to promise owns it, and he builds an altar. And he named the altar El Elohe Israel, God, the God of Israel. Has he come full circle? Yeah. Yes. Yes, he has. I went north with a stamp and a rock and a pile of rocks. Then I came back with 12 kids, 11 boys, and a significant daughter. We don't know if there were more. And what had to seem like billions of sheep, goats, donkeys, oxen. God, the God of the new me.